Y'all Elite Podcast. Covering all the latest news and results from the AEW.
Wait a minute. Sean Spears? Chair shot right to the side of the head of Cody.
This is pro wrestling analysis as you've never heard before.
Deathly Hallows!
Might be it.
1, 2, 3, can save it!
Coming to you every single week. So without any further delay, let's go all in and get the show started right now.
Hello and welcome everybody to AEW Aftershock. I'm your host, Zach Perez, at Spots High on Twitter. And this week, we got an interesting build-up as we continue to work towards the end of the month here, February 29th, for Revolution for All Elite Wrestling. And it definitely was a fun show. There was a lot going on, a lot to build upon, and I think that it's worth just jumping right into it this week, right off the bat, with Jon Moxley versus Ortiz. And they just had a great opener here. I mean, going back and forth, I mean, you pretty much knew off the bat that Ortiz was going to be the one taking the loss here, but having Moxley kind of put him over by taking some offense and having a good back and forth duel really made a lot of sense. And I love the fact, too, that Jericho shouted out the fact Ortiz hasn't wrestled a singles match in 583 days. And then also just him being on commentary as he kind of laid into different things that were happening. It just all made a lot of sense toward the build-up to Revolution. And really, the biggest takeaway happened after the match, of course, where after a paradigm shift and being attacked from behind by Santana on Ortiz after picking up the victory, Moxley decided he was going to go very old school and go for an eye, and he took the keys of the Ford GT that he kind of stole from Jericho, I guess you could say, but really it's in his name and all of that according to the storyline. So he ended up taking that key from that Ford GT and shoving it right into Santana's eye. And the visual of that, I don't know what it is, if it's just something that I have personally, but every time I see something approach an eye like that, it definitely freaks me out. It's reminds me of See No Evil with Kane, if anybody remembers that classic of a horror movie. But I digress here. I love the build-up with the Moxley and Jericho matchup, and I just see nothing but good things for this feud going into Revolution, and kind of almost makes you not want to see it end. So we'll have to see if they decide to pull the trigger on it and give Moxley the big belt and take Jericho down a peg, so to speak. But I really don't know if that's going to be where it ends. I mean, being that AEW has less frequent pay-per-views, it makes it a little bit more difficult to make those kind of calls, because you could very easily kind of right the wrong if people react the wrong way in WWE. We've seen the belts kind of thrown around, Strowman taking the Intercontinental title recently, and then Andrade winning the US title at a house show. I mean, granted, I do like the idea the house show wins, but it just kind of speaks to the fact that things are ever changing over there, and the belts stay on people a lot more in AEW. So even though they're having a pay-per-view, it doesn't mean there has to be a title change, but I think it is getting close to the right time, if it isn't already the right time, to give Moxley the belt. But I'd like to see this storyline carry on a little further, and I would love to see it extend past Revolution, maybe also particularly because of the fact that I want to go to the Rochester show in March. So I'm really hoping that they have some good storylines leading into there, not that they won't already, regardless of the outcome here, but I'd like to see some Moxley and Jericho action live. I mean, their chemistry as a feud so far has been fantastic, and I really buy into this a lot, and I think that it's a real building block for AEW and a real kind of defining feud for the company. But next up, we had SCU taking on the Best Friends. And if you watch Dark, you got to see the Best Friends take on Colin Delaney and Sean Spears and take a victory there. But, of course, here they did not have the same sort of luck. SCU put on a great show. kind of clawing, battling with each other, and just a lot of kind of high octane action, as you would expect from the tag team division here in AEW. I mean, just all over the place. You had a beautiful spear from Trent after getting bounced off the barricade, and some really nice action here, some really beautiful stuff. You just watch it, and it's like a mixture of a street fight and an acrobatics routine. It's a very interesting time to be a wrestling fan because it's so polarizing for a lot of people. Myself personally, I love this type of action where it's like you can't look down and not miss something, but some people in the world just absolutely can't stand this type of wrestling, which I guess to each his own, I guess, you know, but I absolutely enjoyed this, and we ended up having the Dark Order come down to the ring at the end and kind of scurry away once Daniels made his way out, which was very interesting. You know, they're kind of playing on the idea of, is he leading them, or is it just something that they're doing as a kind of a ploy, you know, for marketing themselves, you know, as they're basically trying to recruit all these other people in there. The Fallen Angel being the kind of top recruit on their list. So we'll have to see how that transpires from here on out. But it seems like there's definitely more left in the chamber for Christopher Daniels and the Dark Order. You know, is he the Exalted One after all? Is there, you know, somebody else behind it who has ties with Christopher Daniels? That's why they're, you know, so heavily recruiting him. It's very much up in the air at this point, but regardless, the match that came before it, you know, was excellent, and I think that Daniels has a big future with this Dark Order storyline, and if they get it right, it could be a very interesting twist to kind of give the Dark Order a little more of an interesting backstory and a little bit more of a clearer picture as to what they're trying to accomplish here in AEW. But speaking of clearer to accomplish, the women's division in AEW is, of course, always the thorn in the side and always the pricker on the rose, if you will. And it's just one of those things that it doesn't seem like there is a whole lot of storyline building from week to week. That has changed some, of course, which is a step in the right direction, but the Yuka Sakazaki and Britt Baker match was more like a leap forward, especially with the after-match situation that we had here. So I thought that they had great chemistry in the ring. You know, you got to see Yuka Sakazaki take advantage of some really nice springboards. I mean, with the pants, it definitely reminds you a lot of Sabu, the way that she kind of climbs right onto the rope and waits for her opponent. It just has a very similar feel, and, you know, hitting the Magic Girl Splash kind of showcased that very well. But at the end of the match here, we had Britt Baker taking the loss as Sakazaki managed to kind of roll her up and get her, you know, when she wasn't paying attention, essentially. And, you know, Baker decided to go full heel mode and continue on with that and just absolutely laid into Sakazaki after the match, including a spot where she had her kind of bite the rope and almost curb stomped her in a way. It was very violent looking, and although it's, you know, a ring rope, they sold it beautifully, or Yuka sold it beautifully, as she had the blood dripping from her mouth and a fake tooth kind of spit out, and it was just really a genius way to play off of the whole dentist thing and not be too on the nose while still being very on the nose at the same time. It's not, you know, being hammered over your head quite so much, but I think that she might be the actual spiritual successor of Dr. Yankum, if any of you guys remember that at all. So we'll have to see where this transpires, but I love the way that they're fitting Britt Baker in and they're continuing storylines with her, and it's really smart booking, and I think that she's being really well built as a heel. She's kind of got a Charlotte Flair-esque quality to the way that she's been doing her promos. And I think last week was a much better example. The one on the cruise was a little rough, but she's kind of coming into her own and really embracing this role. So I think that'll be a very good thing for the women's division going forward. But next up here, we had the Elite taking on the Butcher, the Blade, and the Lucha Brothers. This was a crazy over-the-top eight-man tag match, kind of as you would expect. A little bit of everything going on. You had the nice, brutal strength of the Butcher. You had some high-octane action from the Blade. And then, of course, the Lucha Bros always put on a show. And you have that mixed with the Jacksons and then also Hangman and Kenny. And they didn't do too much in terms of trying to tease the storyline between Omega and Paige. They just kind of lightly played on it in an otherwise very intense contest. This is one of the ones that if you really want to just go highlight by highlight, this is definitely worth checking out, in my opinion. I love the way that they handled the situation with, you know, Hangman deciding not to take the tag and having that be the finish because he ended up getting, defeated by the Lucha Brothers with the Penta Driver, assisted with the double stomps from Rey Fénix. And I thought that overall, it did a great job of making everybody in this match look great. Everybody got in a good mix of offense. I think the Butcher and the Blade looked the best in this match that they probably have in All Elite Wrestling. Just really playing their role quite nicely as the kind of brutish heels. And, you know, selling very well for the kind of crazy high-flying antics that they were up against. So I thought, all in all, it was a very good match and a very good way of continuing along the Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and Young Bucks saga, if you will. And I think that it's just one of those things that it's everybody knows there's going to be something that happens. So continually teasing it and making it more and more clear, and then, you know, having the opportunity to swerve at the end or whenever they do decide to pull the trigger, there's so many directions they could go. So I think that this is a great storyline that will really put Paige in another level and has really made him a bigger star. Even, you know, coming off the independent scene, he was considered a huge get for AEW, and now they've built him into a star. So if people are out there saying that AEW doesn't build stars, I mean, the way that Paige has been built with his cowboy shit and now the Hold My Beer meme that has gone famous, and it really feels like an organically built character that has been kind of just morphing based upon the feedback of what the crowd gives and really just paying attention to what goes right for him and what doesn't, and really just having this long-standing gimmick, the kind of fun drunk kind of gimmick, it just has fit him perfectly, and I think that he's excelled in it, and I think that we're going to see a great blow-off at some point. Who wouldn't want to see Kenny Omega versus Hangman Page, or Hangman versus both of the Young Bucks, or, you know, there's a million different ways we could go here, but I think that Hangman is well on his way to being a future superstar for AEW, and they've gotten everything right with him to this point, really. I can't complain about much, but let's go ahead and move on here to Joey Janela versus Kip Sabian, which of course was playing off of the fact that Kip Sabian is with Penelope Ford now, who formerly was with Janela. But this was a decent little match. Really not as great as the rest of the card. Kind of a little bit of a lull in the action. But still a good, solid contest. Nothing really particularly wrong with it. It just didn't keep up the same energy from earlier in the night. So maybe it was just a matter of card placement. But we ended up having Sabian get the win with a handful of tights. Just the classic heel continuation of a feud. And this one needs to be a little bit more fleshed out, because as of right now, it's just the fact that Penelope Ford exists. That's the whole basis of this feud, essentially, is just because Kip Sabian is with Penelope Ford, now him and Joey Janela must feud. And I don't like those kind of, like, draw the conclusion on your own kind of storylines. It's just, there needs to be a little bit more of substance, you know, Joey Janela cutting a promo, saying the reasons why he can't stand Penelope Ford. I mean, there's been little teases here and there of things like that with Janela's promos in the past, but it's just nothing concrete that can really make you sink your teeth into this feud, and I think that's kind of why the match suffered from that a little bit. But you know, it did lead into the 10 lashes for Cody. So I think that they were trying to kind of buffer the card a little bit and not really have a main event this week. So I get what they were going for here, but I still think that, you know, swapping this with that 8-man tag match probably would have kept the energy up a lot better. And even maybe putting the Janela versus Kip Sabian match at the beginning of the night and swapping it with the Moxley match. There's a couple different ways they could have gone about it, but just think the card placement was a little off and the match suffered quality wise as a result. But still a great contest and still worth checking out. I mean, really, I think that you should watch all 2 hours of Dynamite each week, because to me it's the best wrestling show on television right now. But that's my opinion and you can hold me to it. But, you know, kind of furthering my opinion here, it called back my fandom to ECW with Sandman and Woman cracking the cane across the back of Tommy Dreamer. We had the 10 lashes that MJF delivered to Cody, and this was exactly what you kind of expected it to be. You know, a cringeworthy, violent affair that just made you want to hate MJF that much more. And as a matter of fact, someone in the crowd decided to try and attack him. So it kind of shows you just how well this worked. And Cody looked defeated, and you had all sorts of people coming down in the ring, Dustin Rhodes, the Young Bucks, and, you know, just kind of tearing at him and really trying to deliver that empathy for the babyface here. And it just really made so much sense, you know, the way that he delivered the swings and the kind of joy in his eyes as Cody just kind of got more and more defeated and more, you know, in pain and the agony in his eyes. And he sold every hit of that belt just perfectly and really made this feel very much like a modern day version of that Dreamer Sandman. You know, the couple of situations where he kind of had the "thank you, sir, may I have another" kind of looks in his eye. And I just thought that this was a genius way of playing this off. And then even having him get in one more last shot just for the sake of doing it, I just loved every second of this. As, you know, masochistic or crazy as that might make me, I thought that this was a genius way of telling a wrestling story. And it's not just, you know, promo versus promo, and then we slowly build to the pay-per-view, and this one attacks that one. It was much more of a creative take on how to make fans absolutely hate MJF, which isn't really hard because he is a ridiculously good heel. I mean, the way that he sticks to kayfabe and the footage of, like, fan footage of him on the cruise, it just goes to show that this guy is really gets what wrestling is all about and completely respects the culture behind it. And I think that this feud is going to really sell Revolution quite nicely. I mean, you've got the Moxley and Jericho match, and you've got the Cody and MJF match. It's really building up to be a very big pay-per-view, and it has a big aura around it as they continue to build these feuds up quite expertly. And I think before long, you know, we're going to start having the conversation of who has the better pay-per-views. And I think that although AEW has had a bit of a problem in terms of filling out big name matches, I think that now that they've had their television product for a while, you're starting to see that problem disappear. I mean, you've got so much hype behind these two feuds in particular that it kind of makes up for anything else. It's just they're so big that, you know, you could kind of fill out the card a little bit with some lesser matches. And it's just the weight of these two alone kind of brings it to the top. And I'm very much excited for February 29th. You know, I happen to be recording this on my birthday, so if anybody's looking for a gift to send me, 2 tickets to the Rochester, New York show would be fantastic. I'm joking, of course. Please don't send me anything. I don't think that I need to deal with all of that situation of saying that I'm begging for stuff from fans or whatever. But I just want to say, too, you know, always make sure to check out my articles over on LastWordOnProWrestling.com, where I bring you the Dynamite preview every week. You can also check out my Dark review over on ProWrestlingPost.com. I'm also going to be trying to bring in some more articles article, so always keep an eye on my Twitter, at SpotsHigh. Might be bringing some more things over to What Culture, might be bringing some more things to Last Word on Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling Post sometime in the near future, as I kind of level my brain back out after starting this new job. So I just want to thank everybody for listening this week. And I just have one last thing to say. Let me see if I can find it here. All right. Goodbye and good night.